Hi, this is Sandra Roskowolf, culture agent columnist for lbpost.com, and I'm here with
Enrique Arturo Dimec, music director of the Long Beach Symphony Orchestra.
Great, thank you for meeting with me today.
No, my pleasure.
So you just came back from Holland, was it Holland?
I was in Europe, yes. I was conducting in Spain and in Holland, in The Hague. So I just came back from there.
Right. So you, that's part of your regular job, right? You conduct several different symphonies around the world, right?
Correct. I conduct two orchestras here in the United States regularly, which are the orchestras and music director, which is the Flint Symphony Orchestra in Michigan, and the Long Beach Symphony Orchestra. But also I'm music director of the Buenos Aires Philharmonic in Argentina. Those are my three main jobs. But then I go guest conduct many other places, a lot in Spain, and France and Holland. Those are the three places I go the most in Europe. Although I visit other places like England and London, I go to conduct the BBC Symphony Orchestra, so sometimes the Soviet Union or Russia nowadays, where I used to go more often. And then I also go to Poland and to places like that. That's a little bit interesting. And I was for years also the conductor of the New Zealand Auckland Philharmonia. So a lot of traveling.
Yeah. But where do you call home? Where do you live when you're not conducting?
I'm always conducting.
Oh, okay. So you're homeless? You don't have a home?
I'm homeless just like everybody else. No. I mean, I'm always conducting. Uh-huh. I'm always going to from one place to another. I have home, I guess, is wherever I am at the moment, and the place I'm conducting. So I have a home in Michigan, I have a home in Mexico, where I used to be the music director of the National Symphony, at the Opera House also in Mexico City. But what you mean is if I own a house or I own a place, that's a different story. But home is where you at working when you are doing what you like to do.
Right.
That's what I feel. That's home.
I see. Great.
Well, so Long Beach is my home now.
Well, you have homes all over the world then, because you seems like you're able to pursue your passions and your interests all kinds of interesting places.
Well, yes, because in music is something very special. Okay, because music is not just score or a piece of paper that has dots and some lines. Music is a life thing. It's something that one as a musician needs to take it as the most important thing in your life. Mm-hmm. It's something that's inside of you. It's something that's in your veins. It's in your heart. It's in your soul. It's in your brains. It's in your arms, in your eyes, in every single piece of your body. So when you feel in the music and you are playing and making music, everything has to vibrate at the same intensity. So when you are really doing it, then you are really enjoying it. And if you are not enjoying it, probably you shouldn't do it.
Right. Well, when did you come to that awareness? As a kid, I mean, when did you begin to realize how deeply that you connected with music?
Well, since I was a kid. I don't even can tell you the exact date or day, because we were growing up, and I say we because I have two brothers and only five sisters. And we all grew up in this academy that my parents had. So they were professors, they were music teachers, and we were listening to music from 6 o'clock in the morning until 3 o'clock in the morning every day. So it's part of our existence. So we didn't even know sometimes that there was another world. Another world could be different. That was the world. And I think I still want to think that is the world. And that's the world I love and enjoy and want to be. So I've seen the other parts of the world I've been outside quite enough to see that I'd rather be in my own world. Mm-hmm. And I was so happy that I was able to grow up in that environment that created my awareness, I guess, without having to be awareness. It was a second nature. Mm-hmm. So then I love this exercise of making music.
What was? Did you have a primary instrument when you were growing up?
Several instruments.
What were they?
I played the violin, but first of all I started playing the clarinet because my father had a clarinet and it was small enough for my brother and I to reach, and my father used to teach all those instruments, violin, clarinet, trumpet, saxophone, and my mother piano and accordion and several other instruments. And so clarinet was the first one I was exposed, and then the violin, and then French horn, and then piano, of course. And then I encountered to practice percussions as well. So I was always trying to search for a new instrument, something that would be attractive for my career that I want to pursue later on in my life.
Mm-hmm. So at some point, you went through all of the instruments and you said, well, maybe I can just run the whole thing.
Well, it was part of the plan for me to study the instruments. It was because I wanted to learn what I was going to be able to direct.
Sure.
In some ways, to conduct. Because I'm going to explain why I say that. Because I wanted to play all the instruments at the same time. And the only way I can do that was being the conductor. But to me, it's not conducting. To me, it's playing those instruments. Hmm. I want to be the one who's performing those instruments. But that's the only way I can really do them all at the same time.
Right. Right. Well, and I imagine, too, that when you're working with other musicians, and when you look at a score, and it makes it easier for you to communicate your ideas when you have that sort of body knowledge of the instrument and how it is played. You're not speaking in abstract terms. You can communicate in very specific terms as far as the expressiveness of the particular instrument, too.
I think that was the idea. That was the purpose. To be able to guide and motivate the instrumentalist. There are sometimes one is like, oh my goodness, you know, they're such great players. What can I tell them? But that's not only the case. I don't want to tell them what to do and what not to do. Mm-hmm. I want to be able to want to feel that I'm the one is playing. Mm-hmm. So I want them to feel that they can trust me, that they can be with me, and that I'm with them. That I'm. There is not a competition. There is not a fight. We're becoming one unit. Mm. He is or she is the one is producing the sounds. She's the one putting her body or his body with the instrument to produce those sounds. And I am motivating that to happen. I'm exercising that, experimenting the sensations of becoming one thing, becoming one unit, one piece of energy that is creating those beautiful sounds that are sometimes taken just from our own selves, but sometimes it's taken from the most beautiful music written ever. Mm. And that's what I wanted to do. That's my feeling. That's what I do.
That must be an amazing feeling when that happens. Is that something that, you know, because one of the things I know that here in Long Beach, for example, the typical number of rehearsals prior to any performance is somewhere around 4. Is that right?
The typical, yeah. Uh-huh. Can be less.
Is it hard to cement that kind of relationship in such a short interval?
Well, it depends, you know. If you are just a newcomer, you know, it's like everything. They are moments then you can see that you are coming into a new environment, that sometimes things are pluses. But I have to say that when you have an understanding with your musicians, the orchestra, that we are putting the same effort, the same time of ideas together. Sometimes you don't even need to rehearse. I mean, the rehearsals are for all of us to feel comfortable about what we are doing, but it's not to really know the music. The music, we're supposed to know it when we came in.
Right.
You know, right. We don't go there to learn. We go there to experience, to communicate. We come there to do something so special, something different. Being with colleagues that you had to play your part next to, you had probably to play the same part because you are a violinist, you had to be with the other person playing exactly the same notes. That's what we are there for, to learn how to do that, how to be able to be together, how can we produce the sound that is required to bring it into the concert hall. So sometimes, you know, depending on the type of music you are playing, those things are easier, sometimes are more complex. But nothing is new. It's just the different ways that we have to approach it. And that's what we are there to get together, to rehearse, as we call it, rehearsals.
Sure. When you're preparing, like you're preparing for a big show coming up, which it's with Beethoven, and I know you're doing a talk, right, about Beethoven's music? As you prepare for these performances, and you're playing music that you've played many times before, I'm sure, are there opportunities to discover new nuances in the music itself? I mean, or does it change as you change, you know?
I think you just say the right thing. Music is a living thing. And as a living thing, it changes. It grows, or probably goes to a different direction, but because we are performers, so we are not machines. And even the machine, probably with years, would deteriorate. And even when you put the same tape over and over, one eventually is gonna become not 100%. And human beings are basically things that grow, but also can deteriorate. So, but in certain things, when our body deteriorates, our mind and our spirit grows because of the experience, because of the way we see things. So there are some works that can grow on you, and they can also give you something different. Or you can also go and study and say, oh my goodness, how did I miss this? I was not aware this was going on. I was like driving every day in the same street and you didn't notice the tree in the corner is gone or has grew or something, you know? Right. So music is the same thing. As much as people want to think, and they are probably discussions, and I might have with some people and say that it's not true. Music, it was written, and that's the way it's supposed to be, and that's it. I mean, whoever thinks that way doesn't know life. Because life is something different every day. Never the same twice. A moment cannot be repeated. So, same thing happens with music. There are times that you can go, and because of the environment you are performing, can be a concert hall, can be an outdoors, can be in an auditorium, or can be in a gymnasium, it can be in a parking lot, for whatever that might be the reason, the acoustics would change, whether it's warm or it's cold, it's gonna change. And the instruments also are living things, so they change too. for a singer, for example, the voice has a tendency to change to eventually with the years. So when you perform a piece, you might discover that something is easier suddenly, you say, after many years of working on this, become easier. And some others probably are saying, I cannot do this anymore. It's just walking up those stairs every day, and then suddenly one day you say, you know, I cannot walk up those stairs up anymore. I'm going to have to take an elevator. But I can go down still, but I cannot go up. And that's not because you are deteriorating or whatever. It's just how things are.
Right.
But you see it in a different way. Things are completely magical in music, because nothing comes in that type of a nature. It's always positive. It's always bringing something to your soul. It's the most incredible thing we have.
Do you find yourself drawn to a particular era of music, like classical, romantic, modern? I mean, do you find yourself drawn just aesthetically to one over another?
Well, one can have a craving for, let's say, you know, some people like desserts, so they like sugar, they like chocolate. Some people like salty things. I'm the type of a person that likes everything. I'm the one that wants to have a complete meal and can enjoy everything. Probably I'm not so much into the sweets. If you would ask me, say something for the sweets, and I say, no, because I like this better, and I would take this one, and I don't care about the sweets. Mm-hmm. But in music, you also have your times. A symphony is a four-course meal. An opera is a feast. Right. You can be there for hours and hours, so you have to pace yourself how you go about it.
Sure.
But I like to do all kinds of music. I have, as I say, my cravings for the romantics. I'm a particular great fan of Mahler, but probably for the different reasons than most of my colleagues are. I mainly, because as I say, I like to play those pieces. I want to play those instruments. I'm a violinist, I'm a horn player. So where you can find the best lines for the French horn? Well, Mahler's music, or the violins, you know, you have all kinds of beautiful tunes and things to do, and the orchestra becomes a virtuoso instrument. So that's what I love about Mahler music, but also gives something for my imagination to go inside myself. It's an introspective music. So you can have some kind of a voyage, an internal voyage, like that one. Remember the movie about the Fantastic Voyage, and it goes inside yourself in the veins with this little vessel. So that I feel that way when I go with the music of Mahler, and I go inside myself, but not only into the organic part, but into the feeling part,
the
emotional part. Those emotional parts that we are many times afraid of going. And of course, Mahler, a good son of his times, you know, with Freud and all those philosophers that were trying to go as far as possible inside themselves. Mahler also does the same thing with the music. But one style I love particularly to work with an orchestra is the French Impressionism. Because it gives me the opportunity to explore for new sounds, for colors, and to make the musicians respond like they would be just brushes, and we create shades of colors. Then the brush would just go, if it goes slowly, it would be more intense, and it goes fast, the same green or the same blue would be softer. It would be kind of even whitish. And I like to work on that with an orchestra. But I also love the Baroque. The Baroque is one period that I particularly have a great attachment, especially the music of Handel and Bach, to some to some extent, because Bach's violin or orchestral music is not so vast. It's more keyboard, more chamber music things. But Bach is very important for me in my life, because it's the fundamentals. Is a lot of the things are right there. You know, you can play Bach well. You can play well anything, basically.
Right.
Also, I like the new music, and I like to explore with this challenge of the mind. You know, that when the music becomes more intellectual than emotional, then it puts more the part of your brain that is counting and putting numbers together to come to a format, and at the end we have an amount, a result. That's interesting too. That's that type of music, and it's good for us to work on it. But then also I enjoy very much the nationalistics, and I'm saying that because of the composition style, of the movement that started in Bohemia and then in Hungary to bring out the sounds of the folk music. And then it was explored in America in the 20th century. And then now we are seeing it back very strongly, that the participation of the popular music into classical compositions. That was the way it used to be, in the Baroque era. Then we see dances, then we see all types of songs that were sung in the streets, and suddenly are converted into a violin aria, or being an opera house, and that was a popular song being sung in the streets. So now with the new wave that is coming to be composers looking after the Latin American rhythms, I think it's enriching the composition to a new way of putting the symphony orchestra into a new different type of a challenge, because as a classical player, then you have to change your gears and put it into a different way that would resemble the sounds of a popular band, of a popular group. And then suddenly we are going back to the trends, you know, that the plastic thing that also happened in music, then it was to compose just to mathematical things. And then suddenly we are going back again to the organic. And that's happening also in music. So I think there are cycles.
Right.
And we can see it basically in everything that's happening, you know, in all the arts. And the arts probably will reflect more than anything else in life that how these cycles go about and how important are for all of us to know. So that's why I like to do all types of music, because I think it makes me to understand life better, humanity, makes me to understand the existence of a symphony orchestra, the importance of a symphony orchestra, why it should be there, because it's the one that can portray all of those things in one evening,
right,
or in one season, or in whatever you want to put it.
Well, that was actually a question I wanted to ask you about, is it's sort of a demographics question, but it's also about the role of the symphony in a community, and I think they're related in a way. There's always the concern that as an institution, it's speaking to an older audience because they're the ones that are more affluent, have the resources to commit to buying tickets and other support, things like that. And there's also this push to involve younger people in attending and participating, and one of the ways to do that is to introduce new forms of music to the program, but, you know, how do you balance? I mean, is that something that you concern yourself about? Is that something that you struggle to balance?
We struggle just because we don't get enough media. And the media is the one that really can make the difference. We have seen that with a good publicity and with good attraction in the media, you can make the awareness of whatever is going out in the world to the majority of the people. And the people are willing to go either to buy it and to listen or to consume it if the publicity was done in the correct way. But unfortunately, and into the classical world, it has been for years a resistance. First of all, for the people in the classical world, they didn't want it to be this banal. So they felt that going into the commercial world, we were converting something and it's so wonderful and so incredibly done, like it's classical music, it was going to become banal. And everybody was going to be losing the importance of this. And by the time we discover that that banality, it was only if we allowed it to be, the medias or the media system felt that it was like we were not important enough for the grand majority of the consumers. So you're going to sell something, you wanted to sell it to grand majorities, not just to a handful. So we become elite by default. And without wanting to be in a sense, because we wanted to be not banal. No, it's not that we didn't want it to share it with anybody else. It's that we wanted people to crave for it. We wanted to people to feel that they, it was something special there. And not like, oh, it's out there. So that means it's worthless. It was the contrary. We wanted to attract them. But when we noticed it, then it was not working that way. And I'm talking not only about me. I mean, in the general sense.
Sure.
So now that we want to go into the demographics also to try to attract new audiences, we feel some resistance. Because since we are unknown, that means we don't exist. And since we don't exist, it's because we are not good enough. And so for us to invest to make everybody that then we can be a household name, we have to invest trillions of money. But then we can see that it's easier to go in a circumstance to become a star, Dancing with the Stars, or American Idol, then anyone can be whatever they want to be, just risking themselves for a little while. But that's lottery.
Right.
Yes, it's only one that's going to make it out of the hundreds of thousands of people being in line to do it. So that's lottery.
Right.
It's not the same as we are doing. We are not lottery.
Right.
We know what we are doing. And we just didn't know how to get there. So we are beginning to look for those venues, how to really go there without having to lose the quality. Because that's the one part is always in jeopardy.
Right.
Is you cannot bring a museum out. You cannot put the paintings of the great masters in outside because the wind, the sun, or the water can destroy them. And then we are going to be sorry because we lost some of the greatest things we have.
Right.
So classical music, in a sense, is that we have to be able to bring it in a different way, different formats, to be with the people, that they can see that we exist, and that they can have the enough resources to go and enjoy it, not to feel threatened by it,
right,
not to feel like they can graffiti it to use a word, you know, that mm-hmm. that can be destroyed
right.
just by thinking, I was, it's in the street, I can spin on it, I can just push it, and I can leave it on and see what, on the mercy of the climate.
Right.
So that's what it has to, it has to be the balance. How can we do both? How can we outreach new people, new generations, that we have our audiences, and sometimes we think that they are all older people that cannot afford, as you just mentioned it, and at the same time we can all see that society has changed in many different ways. You know, couples, young couples, don't start having children until they are in their 30s.
Mm-hmm.
In the old days, let's say, at the 30s, they were almost having their children in college.
Right.
So they were ending sooner with the obligations of raising a family. So a lot of these couples are going to be 50-something, and they still haven't sent their children into college.
Mm-hmm.
They're still not independent enough to be on their own.
Right.
So that's what we also lose, the part of the audiences. These audiences cannot afford, not only money-wise, but time-wise, to go to the, all those activities, because their children are going to, not only to school, but they have a lot of activities going on.
Mm.
And to be a good, healthy American family, your kids had to go to basketball, to baseball, to soccer, to hockey,
mm-hmm.
to swimming and skiing. So that's too much.
Right.
It's way too much. In the old days, it specialized only in one thing. You're going to be a soccer player. Okay, you go to your training. You're going to be a swimmer. You go swimming. You're going to be this. Now they want to do everything.
Right.
They want to do the, I don't know how many thrones that could be. They want to be everything, and that's impossible.
I'm curious, in your experience, when you work in other countries, do they have similar problems as far as you know, the challenge of the diminishing audience as far as getting older and older, or do you feel like there's more is more integrated into the culture in other places?
Well, it depends what we're talking about. Let's see, we are talking about Europe. Things are changing too, as I heard. I just came back from Europe, and they are having problems too with the young generations.
Mm-hmm.
They are feeling like symphony orchestra is for the adults,
mm-hmm.
and not adults, you know, people from 60 above. And unfortunately, you go to the concert halls, and that's what you see.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You see all this snow, as they call it, all white hairs. But all these white hair people, they want to bring the young people, and they don't want to go. Because
right.
they feel a little bit that they don't belong there. It's not the same attraction they've been having, the adrenaline that they have last very little. Mm. So they need to have more intensity every single minute.
Mm.
And classical music, the adrenaline is built up to have one climax. But the young generations, they want climax every second, every minute, you know? Mm-hmm. They want climaxes. They want to be in a hype the whole time.
Right.
And I think some places in Europe, they are experiencing that problem.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing that orchestras there in Europe are a little more secure than here is because they are government supported.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
In Latin America, we see a little more younger people going to concerts. And I think it's because of what I said before. Couples in Latin America, they begin their families even before they are 20.
Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. So when they are in their 30s, they want to do activities with their kids,
right.
So they bring them to concerts.
Right.
So they are, it's almost like a brother bringing a sibling, bringing a sibling
mm-hmm.
To the concert. They want to have fun together.
Right.
And to do things together. They're still kids, basically. And that's why you can still see the young people going to the concerts. And but also, unfortunately, we are losing ground in Latin America because there are a lot of distractions. We have too many things going on, and cities are growing to be enormous. So to go to one place to another is very difficult. But one thing that helps is that ticket sales over there are sponsored in a way by the government. So you don't find the tickets to be too expensive.
Oh, that's good. That's good.
Yeah, so it's more accessible. Mm-hmm. So a family of four can go for less than $100 to even less, like probably $50 to a concert.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, here in the United States, you know, for $50 you cannot go any place with a family of four.
Right. Well, one of the things I was going to say, though, is that, pardon me, I'm going to cough.
Sure, sure.
One of the things I was going to say is that as an experience, there's really nothing else like being in a room with 60 musicians all playing at the same time. That physical sensation of that sound coming off of the stage and hitting your body, and there's nothing like it. There just isn't. And you know, you can sit in a movie theater and hear a orchestral score of a sound of a film or something like that. It's not the same. There's something I think really special about being in a room with a bunch of musicians that are all playing together in that instant. I don't know. I don't think you can find that anywhere else.
Absolutely. That's part of the experience that we're trying to achieve, that we are communicating. We have to remember that we go 200 years back or 300 years back when the orchestras begin to exist. They were in a different formats. They were smaller groups, but they didn't used to play in a concert hall. They play like in a ballroom, in a chamber. Mm-hmm. That's why we hear the number chamber orchestra, because they play in a chamber.
Right.
So that chamber could have been for two people or for 25.
Mm-hmm. It was dance music.
It was dance music or background music. Mm-hmm. In some cases, it was like that. You know, it was like having your stereo on, and while the people were having dinner or talking or whatever, you know. And then, little by little, this music began to develop into an art form. That it was not just for talking; it was for listening. So they were developing the type of halls they need to have. So the ballroom suddenly was changed, and they put chairs. They used to be just in the sides, so they can dance and listen to music. Now they put it in the center, and the emperor or the queen or whatever, they would sit there and would listen to the performers. And the performers could be playing something, and they would like it in the middle of something, they would applaud. Or they didn't like it, the king or the court would just stand up and leave, and the musicians would stay there playing by themselves. And it was not being rude or anything, it was just the way it was.
Right.
That was the behavior.
Right.
But then when one of the emperors decided that he was meant to be listened and sit there, everybody quietly, and applaud only until the end, it became to be that way. And we've been, ever since, enjoying it that way.
Right.
And we found it that was experienced. This emperor wanted to have, or this king, or whatever that was, the exact person we are talking about, or persons, because he wanted also to be part of the concert. He wanted everybody to participate in that idea of having these musicians performing there, and they practice and they put their talents together, and then to share it with them, and then they would share it with among themselves. So there was something fast and happy sounding. So they would be smiling to each other in the audience, you know. The king would smile at someone and say, okay, well, they would look to each other. It was something sad, and probably he would tear, and then everybody would tear. And it was something they were sharing. I'm not too sure about the tearing, but because they always have a post, you know, they were kind of penguins, you know, they never show their total emotions, mm-hmm. but so to speak, you know, they were sharing things. So within the years we have experience of being in the concert hall is that too, and you have to be aware that going there is to share it with someone else too. Right. And you can see your pals, your neighbors, your friends, you know, sitting there enjoying the music too, or participating with the music. Then it's not threatening to you to see someone and say, oh my God, that person is enjoying the music. Oh, they shouldn't be enjoying it, you know. Come on, this is too sleepy, or this is too whatever. No, no. It's a concert, it's everybody.
Right.
Of course, we hear things differently. Sometimes the acoustics are different in every place. Mm-hmm. So you sit here, you sit there, you might hear something different from the stage. And there's nothing wrong with it.
Right.
It's just you were sitting next to the cellos, you're going to hear more the cellos. You're sitting on the other side with the violins, you're going to hear more the violins.
Right.
Now you want to have a perfect acoustics that you will hear everything coming out perfectly well. There are few theaters in the world that way. Only few.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So you had to really take it away from your mind. You just had to go there and enjoy what you want to see and hear what you want to really hear. You want to hear more of the trumpets, then you sit and decide where the trumpets are going to be heard more,
mm-hmm.
or where the French horns are going to be sitting, and that you can see them when they lift up their instruments, or when they are preparing themselves for playing, and when the timpani player is tuning the instrument. Or just, you don't want to do any of that, you just close your eyes. The only thing that can be wrong, the wrong approach, is that you want to hear it the same way you hear it in your stereo, in your iPod, in your MP3.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to be the same. It's going to be totally different. And we certainly hope so.
Right.
Because there are two different experiences. To listen into your iPod, is going to be experienced for yourself only. The one is listening. You cannot share it with anybody else.
Right.
And in a concert hall, you can share it with a lot of other people, even if you don't like those people.
Well, that's the exciting part about it. I mean, the physicality of the sound, but also, like you said, being in a room with a bunch of people who are at the same time sharing that experience with you. And a lot of times, and hopefully most of the time, it's not just an intellectual experience or a physical experience, it's also an emotional one.
Absolutely.
And I think that, you know, so much of the great music that we hear in concert halls it gives people permission who are listening to open themselves up emotionally. And connect with feelings that they, like you were saying, might not otherwise connect with, you know. And I think that's one of the great gifts of great music, you know.
Yes, but those things also being part of the change in society, because remember, for years, especially in the Anglo-Saxon world, you could not show your emotions in public.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You were always told, compose yourself, behave yourself, just be absolutely under control.
Right.
And that was part of the society. That's the part of what your parents told you and what you as a parent are telling your kids. Then suddenly everything is changing. Becomes the rebellious without cause in the 50s, and then the 60s, the love and peace, and then in the 70s, everybody goes on astray, you know, everybody wants to be free, no one wants to be married to anybody, and then in the 80s and the 90s, the kids want to divorce their parents, and so many different things, you know.
Sure.
We've been going through a lot.
Sure.
Through a lot. I mean, to be able to have a symphony concert full nowadays should be a rave.
Mm-hmm.
Should be really gold medals. Mm-hmm. Because what we are achieving with the time changes that we've been having in society is unbelievable. It's something to really be writing about.
Right.
To really be learning about what is all this? What is gluing all these people together in this concert hall? What is that mystery? I mean, look at churches. Look at baseball and football. They change things to attract their audiences. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. For years, I remember seeing baseball empty. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It would go to the games and they would be empty.
Right.
So they had to create the home run rush, then the 0-1-0 rush. You know, who would want to maintain that? To create something to attract the audiences, their crowds, their people. But we in classical music, we are still performing works that were composed 200 years ago. Mm-hmm. But some geniuses.
Right.
Some people say, what is out there? What is the magical thing that puts all these people together and glues all these people together? That should be something to be studied. To really go and be prized. To go in the Guinness Book of Records. To be in the classrooms of the quantum science. Mm-hmm. To study what is there,
right?
What's so great and fantastic, and then we can bring it out to the new generations, and they can be saying, okay, you know what, I didn't know that, because I didn't want to go with my father, I didn't want to go with my grandfather either, so I've never been in a concert hall. It's too expensive, or it's just, or I need to be dressing properly. I cannot go with jeans. No, they can come with jeans. They can come with shorts and sneakers. These no formats are being
right.
Conventions don't exist anymore. The only convention that exists is that we, the performers, have to go there with our integrity.
Right.
That's the only thing cannot change. Everything else we have to accommodate to the new. Nowadays, mm-hmm. But the integrity of being a performer cannot change, mm-hmm. because that's inside yourself. Right. That's something you cannot erase.
Right.